I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from Dubai in the UAE. Well, what some build as the most important event of our lifetimes finished this week in South Africa. NATO nations like France begged for a BRICS summit invitation, but were reportedly refused. So did the BRICS summit finally seal the coffins of US empire, currency and power. Joining me now from Serbia's capital, Belgrade, is the founder of the think tank BRICS Plus Analytics, Jaroslav Lisavolic. He was previously at the IMF, Deutsche Bank and the Eurasian Development Bank. Thank you so much, Jaroslav. So media across the world, but not in Britain, the United States and the European Union, said this was a big deal in South Africa. The fact that they tried to minimise it, even though India landed on the moon, and that is the I in BRICS, a sign that they're a bit worried, deliberately not covering it in a big way and even showing the speeches of the world leaders that were at the summit?
Well, I think there's a lot to worry about in the sense that we're seeing so many countries that are willing to join the BRICS grouping that clearly this is set to become more and more influential in terms of the world economy in the coming years. So there's more competition coming their way in terms of the competition that is likely to be faced by the West. And I think this is only for the better in terms of where the world economy is headed. This is more optionality. This is more opportunities for various countries in the developing world and maybe for the developed countries themselves as well, if they find the gateways and the possibilities to work together with the BRICS to build a more stable and more sustainable international system. But clearly, in terms of the signals that we're seeing from the West, especially with some of the issues, such as the common BRICS currency, we've seen a lot of comments coming from the West in the past several weeks in the run-up to the summit, which means that, yes, some of these projects that are discussed by BRICS are worrisome for the Western observers.
Yeah, but those two are connected, maybe. What if they just have interloper countries into BRICS, let them in, and then they wreck it?
You know, I really think that there are possibilities and there are formats that could be pursued by BRICS to attract and to invite development institutions from Western countries to invite maybe later on the leaders themselves from the West to participate in some of the BRICS gatherings. But this format, I call it BRICS Plus Plus, as a format that is separately designed to pursue greater cooperation between the BRICS countries and the Western economies, that is something that has to be pragmatic, that has to be grounded in, taking into account the interests of the developing countries, first and foremost. And yes, I think in terms of the first stages of that kind of cooperation, it may be possible for the development banks from, Europe or Asia that have Western participation to participate, as well as the Bretton Woods institutions like the IMF, like the World Bank.
No, wait. Clearly, this has to be done in secret. I mean, you know, the real, the ruble, the rupee, the renminbi and rand all begin with R, I noticed. I think you've commented on. I mean, if they get the Saudi real, which I think is, some are saying, is the critical one, destroying this petrodollar, you can't have this with your old workplace, the IMF, involved, surely. I mean, they will wreck it from the inside. These have to be secret because they're market-sensitive as regards the dumping of U.S. Treasury bonds.
No, I disagree. I think that the BRICS, they have to look at the possibilities of launching perhaps the next stage of globalization. They have to really be guided by very substantial goals. And if, it is about globalization, it is about an effort that is to be led by the BRICS countries for the benefit of the global economy, it has to be inclusive. It is already very inclusive. It is inviting a lot of developing countries into its fore. Why not take on board and allow some of the Western institutions like the IMF, like the World Bank, to participate in the discussions on certain issues that have a bearing on the global economy, like, for example, issues that have to do with energy security, sustainability, green development, boosting economic growth. I think that inclusive approach is supported, actually, I think, by most
of the countries. Where were you working when Gaddafi said that he wanted a common currency for Africa?
That was probably, I think, it may have been Deutsche Bank.
Yeah. What happened to Gaddafi? You seriously think the International Monetary Fund, seen as the persecutor of the entire global south in terms of debt burdens that are destroying the lives of ordinary men and women and children, tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of people, should be invited into the BRICS organization? And isn't that symptomatic that somewhere in the core of this BRICS organization, there is a certain cadre of, I think some call them globalists, that are destroying the real aims of a BRICS new world?
Well, I think it depends, really, this BRICS plus plus format that I'm trying to advance. It depends on how this format is structured. If this is a forum that is essentially championed and led by the BRICS economies, the principles of BRICS and the centrality of the interests of developing countries will be taken into account. And this is a possibility. I think this broad format that allows for some participation of the international institutions, including the BRICS.
They're not international. They're Washington institutions.
They are multilateral institutions. And actually, if you look at the statements of the BRICS economies in the past several years, the statements that come after the BRICS summits, you will see that they express support for multilateral institutions such as the WTO, and they call...
Yeah, what did you make of that? Because, I mean, clearly the WTO is not functioning at all. I mean, the sanctions, well, the United States sanctions 30 different countries. I'm not sure where that was in the WTO treaties signed by the United States. Clearly, the WTO is dead or is dying. Why is China talking about reforms of the WTO when surely most people impartial looking at it will see this as the natural end to what began with the riots in Seattle at the turn of the century?
Well, I think China wants to have open markets. It wants to boost its economic growth through more open markets across the globe. And it sees a reformed WTO as instrumental in creating a more open international...
Yeah, I understand that, but how can you reform it if the United States weaponizes sanctions against countries it politically doesn't like all around the world, and the United States is the biggest economy, not by PPP?
Well, I think clearly there are a lot of issues, a lot of problems with the WTO, including the standoff between some of the major heavyweights that are members of the WTO, including more broadly between the developed and the developing countries. But there's no other way. I think in building a new global economic architecture, these elements, such as the WTO, such as the IMF, such as the World Bank, are very much needed in order for this new construct to be really for the benefit of the global economy and to work properly. Because these are multilateral institutions, there are imbalances. China, other developing countries are working together to fix them. But that's the only way. I think working within these institutions to create a more equal, more kind of inclusive framework is really the only way for us going forward.
Yeah, something is required, but surely, given that China is the biggest trading power, couldn't the Shanghai Cooperation Organization create its own type of WTO organization, excluding those powers that are considered by the Global South belligerents and those that are trying to oppose them?
There is indeed a lot of talk about the possibility of mega regional arrangements, some of the largest regional integration groups to essentially take over from the WTO and replace that organization. But then if that is the case, what we will end up with is most likely, just several regions essentially driving the whole effort, rather than it being multilateral in the true sense, as would be the case in an international organization. So my proposal is really for the WTO to be reformed in such a way that it includes not just individual countries, but also regional blocks. Instead of vying for power for the WTO with these regional integration arrangements, why not work together with them for the benefit of the global economy?
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you can't do that, can't you, because of the sanctions policies over electronics and investment. I mean, in Britain, they sanction Huawei. In the United States, I don't know how many Chinese companies are sanctioned. Chinese companies are sanctioned in Europe. I mean, Europe and the United States, NATO countries, cannot be part of that process. I mean, they've kind of sanctioned themselves that way. Do you think BRICS is prepared for the increased psyops in intelligence war? I mean, Lula was overthrown. He's been on this program about the overthrow with Washington behind it partly. South Africa has a $3 billion IMF debt warnings. In the week of the BRICS summit, they got warnings from the IMF. And, I mean, the EU, US, UK is all but war with China. Britain has sent its aircraft carrier there numerous times. The United States is sending weaponry against China, bases all around it, and, of course, is at war, in the proxy war in Ukraine against Russia.
Well, my point is really that the best that the BRICS can do and should do is to focus on their economic vulnerabilities and try to fix them. We see that apart from some of the debt issues, there are also economic growth issues in most of the BRICS economies. So the way to reduce your vulnerability on the international stage is really to reduce to the degree possible your economic imbalances. And this is something that needs to be more of a focus for the BRICS going forward. In my view, in terms of the economic agenda, in terms of the financial market agenda, there's not enough presence of that in some of the discussions that we've been seeing in the past several years within BRICS.
Yeah, Slavoj Zavolik, I'll stop you there. More from the founder of BRICS Plus Analytics and former managing director at the Eurasian Development Bank after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the founder of BRICS Plus Analytics and former managing director at the Eurasian Development Bank, Yaroslav Lisavolik. Yaroslav, in part one, you were telling me about how the fact that some of these BRICS economies that are in debt, or these Global South economies that want to join BRICS, need to reform. Isn't the point that they shouldn't in any way reform the way the IMF and World Bank tries to make countries reform at all and pursue, if anything, I don't know, policies a bit like the Chinese Communist Party, which, of course, brought 800 million people out of poverty, directly against the kinds of ideas that were emanating from the IMF and World Bank, massive state investment into smaller units, but still keeping the idea of Chinese communism alive?
Well, the whole idea behind BRICS is precisely to create new options and to create scope for divergence in the models of economic development that are pursued by developing economies. So absolutely, the platform that is created by BRICS and the format of BRICS Plus and institutions such as the New Development Bank, they create that scope for optionality and the possibility for developing countries to essentially choose between, say, the conditionality that is coming from the likes of the IMF or the World Bank, or the options in terms of financing from the new institutions that are being created by BRICS and BRICS Plus. So this is about the choice, this is about optionality, and this is precisely what the BRICS are doing. At the same time, of course, there will be, I think, going forward, inevitably a competition of sorts and between, say, the system of Bretton Woods institutions and the system of institutions that is becoming more and more prominent coming from the BRICS. And I think that kind of competition is maybe fruitful and maybe beneficial for the world economy.
Historically, when any Global South leader tries to pursue economies and economic strategies different to that basically dealt out at the business schools of elites in Europe and the United States, they get assassinated by the CIA. So what is the point of BRICS coming out with all these fruitful ideas of multipolarity, different ideas allowing different countries to seek their own ways, if as they ally and as they converge on some, there must be some economic convergences, let alone for a dollar, if they don't have a military wing?
Well, I think the key to success, really, I'm an economist, so from my side, the way I see it is...
Well, you saw the Nord Stream. Joe Biden, according to... You saw the Nord Stream economically, what happened to Europe.
Let me finish what I wanted to say. If you assemble a strong enough platform that has a lot of countries, as is seems to be increasingly the case with BRICS Now and BRICS Plus, then you will have a center of gravity in the world economy that is increasingly attracting investment flows, trade flows. And this is essentially, I think, the goal for the BRICS economies. Listen to what Lula is saying during the BRICS summit. He's saying it's not about our antagonism with the West, it's about us trying to organize ourselves. And this is exactly the point. The developing world needs to organize itself and to render the alliances, the economic alliances that are out there, more structured, just in the same way that if you look at the developed economies, their alliances of, you know, their regional integration groups and others, they're very, very structured, very competitive. The developing world, on the basis of the platform of BRICS Plus, they need to advance towards an alliance framework that...
I don't understand yours. How are they competitive? The alliance between the United States and Europe has been a disaster, arguably, for Europe. Germany is in recession partly because of United States policies. It's that alliance that has destroyed economic growth in the past 12 months. It's been a disaster for Europe, its alliance with the United States economically.
Well, I mean, for Europe, it may also be, options that they will explore increasingly as they see that the BRICS economies are becoming more influential and increasingly become the center of gravity in the world economy, they will have to think twice about other alliances, the prioritization of other alliances. They will start according more importance to the likes of BRICS. And I think, again, it's important to keep the door open for, you know, we said international organizations with Western participation, but also regional integration blocs. And I think when I talked about the BRICS plus framework that would allow for some Western participation, of course, during the first stages, I meant primarily, you know, development institutions that would really pursue primarily more of a pragmatic economic agenda with the BRICS.
We invite President Lula back on because some might say, I don't know. I may ask him whether he shows a certain naivety about that ability for the United States to ignore the success of BRICS. Did you not see that Xi Jinping looked angry during his speech about Western, so-called Western imperialism over so many years, heralding BRICS in a way that was far more antagonistic than what you heard from Lula?
Well, I think the Chinese...
Let alone from what Vladimir Putin appeared to be saying.
Yeah, I think the Chinese approach is always that of patience. And I think patience is one of the keys to the success that the Chinese economy experienced in the course of the past several decades. Yes, there will be, you know, conflicts, there will be frictions, contradictions with the West. But the way that, you know, China takes it in stride and continues to press its agenda of inclusive BRICS, of, you know, I think from the statements that we're hearing from China, it seems that they are actually open to the possibility of some Western participation further down the road in the longer term within the BRICS or the BRICS.
Further down the road when their economies have collapsed, maybe, but in the interim, isn't it the case that actually China, some people are saying, are going to have trouble satisfying their own demand at home, given the, I know in the NATO nation press, they say China's in economic trouble. But within China, there are obviously worries that it's going to be able to produce enough goods just to supply its home markets. So why not just ignore Europe and the NATO nation powers that many in the global south believe have been responsible for so much killing and destruction over these past years, and trade between Africa, Latin America, Southeast Asia, and the non-Washington aligned global south countries of East Asia?
The more options, the better. So you shouldn't exclude the exports and
well, they're the ones excluding, in fairness.
Sure. But at the same time, I think, if you look at China, you see that throughout the past years, the emphasis has shifted in terms of the growth paradigm away from exports towards domestic demand, towards services and other drivers, and of course, domestic consumption. Now, for a variety of factors, these drivers have weakened somewhat, and there's a need, I think, for the Chinese economy to rediscover and explore again the possibilities of using exports as you know, a supporting force in boosting economic growth. And in this regard, BRICS Plus is a major asset because it opens up large markets of the global south to China's exports. And these are the markets that are relatively closed in terms of the levels of import duties. At the same time, these are the markets that have significantly higher growth rates than those of the developed economies. So I think for China, there may be a time in the near term when they rediscover the need to forge ahead with greater exports abroad.
Given that famously Joseph Borrell, the EU foreign minister, said the rest of the world is a jungle unlike the garden of Europe, and the United States and European countries consider themselves, well, the biggest threats to them are China, how do you expect them to sabotage all the plans of BRICS leaders, BRICS committees, business development committees. Are they going to use propaganda to affect market sentiment, or are they actually powerless except for their militaries to sabotage the plans of the BRICS groups?
Well, I think what you've seen in terms of the approach to BRICS in the past was primarily essentially, ignoring BRICS in terms of their, meetings, in terms of their agenda. Now, increasingly, I think this is something that is becoming more and more difficult for the West, simply because the agenda is so important and so critical for the world economy as a whole, and also for the international financial markets. The theme of R5, the BRICS currency, is really the most important and the most widely discussed theme right now with respect to BRICS.
Sorry to interrupt, but just on the R5, isn't Saudi Arabia the most critical member there? I mean, why do you think that we're not hearing more about Saudi representation at BRICS, given its centrality to the global energy world we all live in?
I'm a big proponent of Saudi Arabia joining BRICS because I think clearly, first of all, this is a major, of course, energy player. So from the point of view of the longer term development of BRICS, this is, of course, a major asset. The most important thing that I see with BRICS is that each country represents a certain region of the global south. And so there is one region, one of the few regions that is left out by the BRICS in terms of coverage, if you will, of the core, is the Middle East. And in the Middle East, the leading economy is Saudi Arabia. So in terms of greater representation of the global south, it makes complete sense for Saudi Arabia to join the BRICS movement.
And how will the BRICS system and all these plans be affected if, as is openly being spoken about now in the United States, a second military front against China is opened up in the next, who knows, the way they're talking, it seems to be, we seem to be months away from sort of military confrontation in the South China Sea. How will that affect BRICS Plus?
You know, I think that really the guiding principle for BRICS needs to be to look through all of these difficulties, all of these challenges, and pursue a very ambitious and a very inclusive agenda with regard to BRICS Plus. You clearly saw that when China relaunched the BRICS Plus format last year, the response from the Global South was tremendous. Tens and tens of countries wanted to join the grouping in response. So I think that kind of inclusivity, openness with regard to the global south, and also greater pragmatism in boosting the economic prowess of BRICS Plus will position, I think, BRICS for a far stronger position in terms of not just the economy, but also international stature.
Yaroslav Lisovolik, thank you. And that's it for the show. We'll be back on Monday to see if there's life in the old empire yet with the officer who was until recently commanding general of the entire United States Army in Europe with some 100,000 troops, retired U.S. Lieutenant General Ben Hodges, ahead of the second anniversary of the U.S. defeat in Afghanistan. Until then, you can keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.